Hey there. So I wanted to briefly interrupt this podcast because I have some really exciting news. We're really excited to do this. We collectively here at Social Global Grind wanted to come up with some things to support the podcast and small business owners, not only in New Zealand here, but like all over the world. Like, I'm from Los Angeles. I want to be able to give back where I can in any place that you're actually listening. One way that we're doing that is that we have launched a newsletter called Here's What's Happening. And it's little bite-sized chunks of what you need to know to progress in social media with your business in mind. So go now to socialglobalgrind.com and sign up for our newsletter. There, we will be able to drop in when it's needed, stuff that you need to know to help push forward your social media and business and get noticed and get seen and interact and get that engagement up. All of those little bits and pieces are going to be there. So go to socialglobalgrind.com and sign up now. Hello, everyone. So I believe we're in week 12 in our little lockdown here in Auckland, New Zealand, and it is rough. It's hard. It's just really, really hard not to connect, but I'm really excited to have an appointment tomorrow. Like, I get so excited to go to the market. It's like date night. It's just dumb, but it's really hard not to see anybody and to interact with people because yes, I'm an introvert, but I really love being around people on an intimate level. So, you know what I mean? It's just connecting, having a coffee, catch up, seeing what's going on, like that stuff. And I really like brunch with friends and just, you know, catching up. It's just, I miss all of that stuff. And I know that if you're in Auckland, New Zealand, you're missing a lot of stuff too. So I just want to acknowledge also that it is probably the fifth time collectively that women have had their period in lockdown because we've been here for 12 weeks. And I'm just feeling the ladies out there and just, oh, goodness. It's been rough. It's been really tough. This episode, I found myself wanting to gather receipts, make sure that everything that I did, I came correct. I made sure that everything was there to present to you some pieces that a lot of women of color have to deal with on a daily basis. And one of the second part of this episode, when I talk about Bethany Frankel, I mentioned that all of these new phrases, now I just want to clarify, they're not new, they're new to me. I didn't have the language to articulate things like microaggressions. I'm a Gen Xer. We did not have all of this beautiful articulation that has come out recently in describing our experience with, I'm still trying to find the words of, yes, microaggressions, however, what we've had to go through and how we deal with it on a daily basis, and i.e. in business. It's really hard to be a woman of color in business when a microaggression thought or vision is out there and you have to raise your hand saying, hey, it's actually, that's your experience as a white woman. That's great. Glad that you got here. However, there is a broader conversation, a broad spectrum conversation. And I love that phrase, using broad spectrum, that is all inclusive for every woman. Depending on what shade brown she is, doesn't matter. We are broad spectrum. We add to this experience, and it's not like that for us. And I wanted, so I found myself not wanting to speak about it. And I think that, and I might get some listeners upset if they are of Latin heritage or at Latinx heritage. I don't feel we voice enough. We keep very quiet in the background. And I am a part of that. And I like to keep quiet, therefore I can pass in likability. And that's hard to say because my chest is starting to tighten up right now just thinking about it. But I know that part of this podcast and what I need to do, what I've always known, is that I have to have more voices of women of color, including mine, out there. Even if it's a not popular conversation, I have to progress this conversation because it's still happening. And in particular, I was just going to release this podcast and just talk about the narrow-mindedness of Bethany Frankel's comment. And she doesn't understand that it's just like, oh, well, a lot of people don't work, you know, they don't work as hard as I do. And that's why I got here. No, honey, it's not just how you got here. There are a lot of things that are at play. And let's talk about your experience, where you came from, and hello, the big elephant in the room, you're white. And that gives you better opportunities than most. Because I guarantee you, there is a woman of color that side by side did exactly the same thing and is not where you're at. And you have to self-reflect on that. Why is that? Why is that? And I think that Bethany Frankel is a really good example because, well, first of all, she's Teflon. Everybody loves her. And it's not this, I know that this is not anything, and my intention is not to just rip her down on this. I just want to bring her as an example of what I see in the corporate space, in the C-suite conversation of white women, you know, really talking about or giving advice like, hey, this is how I made it. And I'm like, dude, that's not the only thing that helped you get there. You are, you know, being helped by a lot of people that say, you know what, it's okay for her to have the corner office. It's okay for her to have the C-suite. It's okay for her to have this opportunity. It's okay to put her on Bravo, on New York Housewives. And by the way, it's kind of like the Friends conversation with Friends, that show that happened in the 90s. The big joke was, in all of New York City, in that cafe, and everywhere around, there's not one black person. And then eventually, I think, you know, what I forgot what the guy's name is, but he had a black girlfriend. But that was, you know, like the only black presence. And I'm like, what? You know, no. Same thing with New York Housewives. Look how hard they're adjusting for a housewife that's black. It's ridiculous. So the representation is not there. The inclusion in conversation is not there. And I wanted to do that. In this thing, when I was producing this particular podcast, I was also felt really like, people, is this going to land? Can people get it? I think that because my experience and my really good friends here in New Zealand are Caucasian, I have very few people that are women of color that I'm trying to actually try to get in into more friendship groups that are women of color, but it's really difficult, especially for women. It's really hard. And there's a trust factor there as well, which it's actually another show. I'm not even going to talk about the complexities of trying to have friends that are Caucasian versus women of color, because it's literally another show, and there's a lot of different nuances and all of that. But with that said, a lot of my really good friends and people that I love and adore have the Caucasian experience, right? So how do I actually say something like this and have it land and be absorbed? So my little Gen X asked, started looking around and going, okay, who else can I pull? Oh, yeah, Rachel Hollis. And Rachel Hollis was, I was incensed after her statement. I'm going to play some of it here. Part of it is because, yes, it's the most arrogant thing I've ever heard. And I actually kept it for a while on my iPhone, like the actual audio and some images from that and the whole thing. And I found myself during this social justice uprising the last 2 years, I had like a little folder on my phone that said receipts. And I literally was getting New Zealand Herald, any news things, BBC, anything that I saw that was needed to change the headline because it was so flippin' racist, and it's still out there. And, you know, even Australia news affiliates that were there, and they were just positioning themselves where whenever they're telling a story, it's not favorable to the person of color, or it's completely racist. So I was just piling this stuff up, and I guess mid this year, I just went, I'm going to delete everything because I can't have that follow me. I can't have a digital archive around me all the time. in a spiritual sense of having all these stupid receipts. So I deleted everything. So it took me a while to find this Rachel Hollis piece. I'm going to go ahead and play it now.
Yesterday, I was doing a live stream, and I mentioned that there's a sweet woman who comes to my house twice a week and cleans. She's my house cleaner. She cleans the toilets. Someone commented and said, "You are privileged AF." And I was like, "You're right. I'm super freaking privileged, but also I worked my ass off to have the money to have someone come twice a week and clean my toilets." And I told her that, and then she said, "Well, you're unrelatable." What is it about me that made you think I want to be relatable? No, sis, literally everything I do in my life is to live a life that most people can't relate to. Most people won't work this hard. Most people won't get up at 4 a.m. Most people won't fail publicly again and again just to reach the top of the mountain. Literally every woman I admire in history was unrelatable. If my life is relatable to most people, I'm doing it wrong.
Okay, a lot to unpack here. Part of it is, it's not in this bit here. She goes on to say that the people that she really admires and that she models herself after are Harriet Tubman and Oprah. And what? You know what I mean? And I think you could probably cue every woman of color that heard that bit just wanted to just vomit. In the same space and breath of all of that lunacy that you just spouted out, you're going to go ahead and say that you model yourself and you're a trailblazer, just like Harriet Tubman and Oprah. You do not have that capacity or that literally that privilege because you're not a black woman. I can't claim that either because I'm not a black woman. So that was really stupid, dumb, and the arrogance of her actually barking back on something that she should have took some inventory on and processed and said, all right, why is this making me privileged as fuck? Why is having this conversation privileged as fuck? She didn't do the work. She just passed it on as something that she was entitled to and she went forward with it. And that part, that bit, that just like going into, hey, this is mine, forget everybody else, that's their problem. That essentially is what my argument is for white women not seeing the whole broad spectrum of how women of color contribute to not only the business space, but the marketplace, but the ecosystem. That's the big one, right? Because we're looking at climate change. And it is absolutely an indigenous conversation. If indigenous people spoke more, which they have at this past conference, if they were able to speak more on how it affects them and the importance level of how the white community sees themselves, there wouldn't be an environmental problem. You know, clean water, lush vegetation, you know, a healthy earth would not be a problem or not being exploited as it has been. So again, this is a broad spectrum conversation. I just wanted to put this out there. Yes, I came with receipts. I had to. It's a part of who I am, I think, right now. I'm still processing and seeing how I can remove receipts from my life. The thing is that we're always getting hit back like, show me an example. Show me an example of how you or someone else was have that discriminative conversation. Like, show me how that happened. And here I am grabbing receipts. And you know what? I'm not the only one. And it's really wearing and tiring. I'm in a better place than I was in the beginning of this because it really was something that was traumatic and I didn't have the tools or anything to process this. I'm still working through it, but I feel like I have a stronger backbone when it comes to this. And I'm doing a lot of more self-care practices instead of receding. It's not a fight or flight because I feel like my mode is always fight. I'm trying to get back to the part where I used to discuss. And I'm still not the best. I still don't have the communication part to do that. I've noticed that I've gone through waves where I write off everybody and then I go back into it, you know, like I'm ready to have a full conversation. I think I'm ready to have that full conversation now, but it has got to be respectful, otherwise I'm not into it. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's a journey. But anyway, I'm going to leave this here. We're going to be right back and we're going to go with second part of what I feel Bethany Frankel needs to bring and open her eyes about that broad spectrum conversation. It can't just be about her success and not recognize the privilege that got her there. Hey there. Before we get started, I wanted to, if you don't know about Asana, I wanted to come in here and have you download this app. Why it's important is that we're going to be using that for a lot of our podcasts in the future. We want to show you how to use it. It's a free tool that you can use for your business, and it's absolutely what we use with our paid clients in our agency side of socialglobalgrind.com. So what we want you to do is just go to Asana. You can do it on the iOS app, I believe. I'm not sure if it's available for anything else. And type in A-S-A-N-A, and you'll see Asana. And then we're going to actually take you step by step on how to use it on an upcoming podcast. So get yourself ready. It's going to be completely game changing. We're so excited to share this with you. This is exactly the tool that we use with our clients to showcase approval processes on social media. It's a way for you and your assistant to get social media off the ground. It's going to be really exciting. Go to asana.com and download the app. Hey there. So thanks for coming back. Now, this second part, we're going to be talking about Bethany Frankel and her contribution in sharing her success story. Again, not having that broad spectrum approach is definitely there. But for me, when I started to self-reflect on my business, I mean, we're doing really well here in New Zealand. It's starting to gain momentum. There's a little bit of a drop of confidence because we are in a lockdown. However, a lot of businesses are starting to find out, like, hey, if I'm not on social media, I'm not present. And that's exactly the point. So while I was looking at this and just showing up and really, I'm also started a coaching program that I'm going to be releasing with my Kajabi platform. It's going to be really exciting. I'll tell you guys more about that then. And all of these pieces are coming together and I'm starting to reflect how far I've come from when I started the company and prior before that, like what my experience was in business. And then, you know, at the time when I was doing this, I saw Bethany Frankel's Instagram thing, and it's really hard. It's so hard, I think, for me as a woman of color that, you know, there's people that you, what's that saying? Don't try. It's really hard when you meet your hero, and then they, you know, you turn out that they're not really a hero. And of course, she's human. I had this admiration in the beginning. And now I think it's really adversarial feeling about her because she just, you know, although she does a lot of great work with, you know, philanthropy and getting those causes out there and really contributing that way, she puts her mouth in it all the time. She's very contradictory too in her personal life. You know, I think she was talking about the book that just recently came out when I was, forget, was it called Thorn and Roses? And she's talking about, well, you know, I joined Real Housewives to be like, you know, really help empower other women, when actually if you watch any of the seasons, she's everything but that. You know what I mean? Especially towards the end when she's found success, she's very centric about her position there and what she's there for. And it's just, it's really, I mean, honestly, it's almost like the absolute arc of how I feel with white women. You know, you of course, just like any other woman, you support them and then they let you down. And I think that she is a really good archetype for that, especially with me when I started seeing her. We're actually in the same place, the same aspirations, the same sort of like, you know, thrive to get business off the ground. And, you know, even finding the person that she thought she was going to spend the rest of her life with, like all of those, getting married, like it was very parallel to me. And then, you know, reality hit, so to speak, who she is, what she wants to created herself to be. And again, it's just an archetype. I don't personally dislike her. I still don't know her. But I thought it was a good parallel in terms of what my experience is with other white women when you really admire them and you put your, you know, your faith and you know, your, what's the word? When you really want somebody to just succeed and then it's just, it stops at her success and there's nothing else. You know what I mean? Like, just not that broad spectrum conversation. So in this second bit, we're going to go ahead and break down a little bit more about that.
Hey, how are you? I am fresh off of, coming off of level 4 lockdown in Auckland, New Zealand. Oh my gosh, it's been a while. It was like August 16th. And then we stopped at the 21st, and now we're on level 3, which looks like a lot like level 4, except we can take fast food. I almost said takeaways. See, I'm still integrating that whole Kiwi/American vocabulary. But anyway, so everybody went mad and crazy, and they went ahead and they got their coffee takeaways, and they went and they got their fast food. In fact, it's making the rounds right now on late night television on the gang activity that was caught with like all of these buckets of KFC chicken, which is hysterical because it felt really real to us. But it's really incredible is that they are fanatics over here about KFC, which is really, really cool. But it's totally different. Like, you know, in the US you get like these, you know, steroided big pieces of chicken, and you come over here and they're really wee and they're tiny and it's really, really cute. And I quite like it. I like it much better, just cleaner. And they're much smaller. I think my husband who is a Kiwi, but has lived with me in the States for such a long time, when he came over here and he had a bucket of chicken, he's like, what is this? It's like chicken nuggets. But anyway, it's really, really good. I'm still very fresh out of just, I feel like, isolation. So this one's just going to be a bit of a rambling on what I've thought about. And a lot of it had to be when I was self-reflecting about my business, where we're at socially, not only just living in this community in Auckland, but also what the state is on social justice, racism, that whole, really just getting that education around what I feel has been kind of a reawakening of what I needed to do to process and feel good to go to the next step in my business. And a lot of it has to do with a lot of racial improprieties and reconciling. And I say reconciling because you have to sort of look at what has been in your past and your career, where there is a lot of, I mean, naturally, there's a lot of self-doubt anyway. When you're doing your own thing and you're doing your own business, there's so much self-doubt. But what one of the layer is for women of color is that actually there's a thick layer of why you couldn't get there faster. And there's a couple of things. I'm actually going to give you some links of some of the things that I've seen. And there was a particular Mary Portis a podcast with Eric Collins that talked about the realities of just people of color trying to get venture capitalists to invest into their businesses, and what the low, we already know there's a low percentage. In fact, when I tried to do something here in 2014, 2015 to get that awareness on with just women. And for me at the time, it was just women as a broad spectrum. So it wasn't women of color. It was just women, and the percentages were less than 1% at the time that in the country of New Zealand were getting any sort of funding or any sort of meeting. And it was really, really hard, and I was trying to get a little bit of awareness around it. And it absolutely 100% fizzled out There was three people involved, myself and I had two other partners. And the thing that fizzled out was we weren't getting heard and seen, and we're putting in a lot of work and energy into something that just was not getting any traction at all. And it burned us all out, all of us. And we all at the same time of this was an absolute passion project. And we all knew if anybody can really move this would be these three women. And people were actually coming to the cause to lend a hand and do it. And it could, in terms of community, nothing was wrong with it. We were all in. What stopped us was the progression and people hearing us to go into that pathway. And there were some leads and there might have been something and we might have gotten a couple of investors to help us really create this. However, it just kept on falling flat. And when things like this fall flat, it's really hard to progress. And I'm also reflecting on how this is structured with age tiers. So if you're between 20 and 30, 30 and 40, 40 and 50 and higher, where is the endurance? Where is the communication style? Where is the relativity and the relatability when it comes to pressing, getting something like this? And it usually always skews much younger than it is older. And I always think of this. I don't know why, but this is always stuck to my mind. So on The Biggest Loser, when I was really watching it, I don't know, early 2000s when Julia Michaels was still in it. And I think it was her that said, and it stuck out with me, when they were looking at contestants that had the longevity and the way to actually go across the line and really make an impact. It wasn't the girls that were in the 20s because it was just they were stuck in the pain. Like, oh, I can't. This is too hard. There's no way. There's just it was probably one of their first battles with pain and mindset and pushing through. But in reflection or comparison to their 40-year-old counterpart, they've experienced pain. They understand it. They understand endurance through it. They understand how to cross the line. And however, the same journey is really, really hard. However, the people that persevered further along quicker were the people that were over 40. And that stuck with me. That really, really stuck with me because we're always talking about a conversation of when younger people get the opportunity for scholarships, for grants, easier than it would be for somebody that is past 40. And that just stuck with me. I'm like, wait a minute. A lot of times when you're in your 40s, you do your second round. You're either done with early childcare. You might be a primary caregiver in your home. There's something there for a lot of people. It might be that whole first wives club when you're going through a divorce in your 40s. You're reimagining, reconfiguring what you do. And that is such a magical time. It is almost, it's you know, when you're graduating from high school, the whole world's with you. You're either going to go and do your year travel, and I'm just saying this like everybody has an opportunity, which I don't. For me, I was working, but it still was an opportunity to understand what the future was. It was all mine. I could either go to school, go to work, what am I going to do? That space is reimagined with you, and you're wiser, and you understand what it means to restart. Is a magical time for you in your 40s. So all of this is great. The thing that we don't talk about is and acknowledge for women of color, what were the obstacles that truly almost gave you PTSD during that, first two decades of work, two decades of adult life, really? What are those things? And for me, what I've noticed in the last 5 years, it hit me in the face when I came to New Zealand because the subtlety of the racism was not only palpable, but it slaps you in your face. It is a sideswipe. And part of the things that I did when I came here, instead of just working on my online business and just steady on, I got knocked off and I needed to prove myself in a market that was in a different country And I needed to prove that I actually knew something about social media, digital marketing, and that space. So I ran around hard in this area to try to, I guess, beef up my CV to show that, I was a director of marketing at this startup, and I, you know, we worked in the film industry, and I was a digital director for there, and I had directorships, and I've even at one point taught at a university level here in New Zealand about social media, and I did all of these things just to make sure that no one would question that, hey, I knew what I was talking about. And it's totally different when you go into a workplace as a woman of color. For a long time, and I will say this here, I don't think I've ever said this publicly, for a long time, I did not want to reveal that I was Mexican American. Because what was happening to me on the street at the time, I lived right in the city, right in the CBD, and I kept on seeing people dressing, or they call it dress up, and it's a UK thing, but it's also here. And you would go out for drinks and you would do a fancy dress. I think of it's called a fancy dress. And you would go out in costume. And a lot of the times there were these Sambo images of, or people dressed in Mexican garb. And it pissed me off. And it was so blatant in your face. And then one of the things, and it even happened to me at work. I was a digital recruiter at one point, and we had that fancy dress, come in costume. We're going to have a quiz thing day tomorrow. And sure enough, just like clockwork. And I knew it. I told my colleagues before, I just went, you know, I fear that I'm going to come in tomorrow and somebody's going to dress up as a Mexican. I'm going to lose my shit. And they're like, oh, don't, it's okay. It's fine. Don't take it so seriously. Don't take it. You know, don't take it personally. It's just how we do things around here. It's that whole, and this is a new word. I'm associating with a lot of these microaggressions. That's one of them. Microaggressions is a new word. But what really hit me this week was the gaslighting and phrases that are gaslighting within racism. So, you know, like not all Black people are, experience racism, like that kind of crap. You know what I mean? Like that gaslighting stuff. So I'm trying to, my Generation X mind has been going, okay, I've been trained to be polite in these type of situations, right? So I got to be polite in this environment so that I don't look like the aggressor or the person of color that has the attitude and then get isolated and then, you know, you can't really move up in the world. So... God, that was a tightness in my chest. But anyway, so you go into these bits and pieces where you find out where the microaggressions are and why people just don't understand it. A lot of the Caucasian colleagues that I had just don't, they sort of look at you a little sideways when you're trying to explain how hard this is to move past it because they don't see it, they haven't experienced it, and they kind of look at you with sympathy. And, you know, and try to get you to move past it instead of within the boardroom. If something is flying around, a joke that's inappropriate, how do we collectively shut it down to support the people of color in the room? And that's something that I try now. Also, the complication here is that I am married to a Caucasian who is Scottish descent, very Kiwi, and has not seen any of these microaggressions in action or doesn't understand that he's saying it or actually contributing at times. And he's done so much work with me, I think, especially since I got here, because I would explain it and I would explain, oh God, here we go. Try not to cry. Explain what the effect it has on you. And sometimes it can stifle you and your movement. For me personally, when I experience something that is hurtful, I stop and I stop everything because I just need to not go forward. I need to assess to make sure that the area that I'm in is safe. And it's really important that we understand that. And the reason why I'm doing this particular podcast too is because during this time, I have seen a couple of examples of what white colleagues, white CEOs see, and they perceive that this, when they talk about, hey, how are you successful? Tell me about that story. And they're talking about it from a very white perspective, without acknowledging that, hey, not everybody has this. I can't really give you advice to go up the ladder because I'm not a woman of color. This is what I did that worked for me. However, I just want to acknowledge that. Instead, it's really stupid remarks that say, well, I'm sorry to tell you, but the reason why you're not successful is because you didn't work hard enough. It's because you didn't put in the enough hours, you didn't have enough dedication, you didn't do what you had to do to get there. And that is not true for everybody. And I wanted to put a podcast out there that talks about the untruths of that, I guess the caucasity of some CEOs, where they just do not see the peripheral, the whole vision. And I think that now in this day, if we want to get smart as, in business leadership, especially when you're trying to grow a business, we need to see all faces. And yes, folks, we need to see color. Don't come out. This is one of those other phrases that is a gaslighting phrase. Oh, I don't see color. I've never seen color. I see the person. Well, if you don't see color, if you don't see who I am, then you're not seeing me. If you don't see that I'm brown and acknowledge that, then no, you're not seeing me. So in a way, it's very telling when someone tells you that they're not really interested in your experience, but they're also belittling your experience. And that's what I wanted to talk about mostly today. So here's an example from Bethany Frankel on Instagram of what she thinks that success should look like through her lens.
You know what you do? You just execute. You execute your idea and you be better than everybody else. Doesn't matter if you're a woman or a man, you be better. And you go to the end zone and you just know, because I'm telling you, because I've been from the other side and I'm over here and you know what you do? You just execute. You execute your idea and you be better than everybody else. Doesn't matter if you're a woman or a man, you be better. And you go to the end zone and you just know, because I'm telling you, because I've been from the other side and I'm over here. And most people don't work hard. And most people don't work hard and smart. You could see someone at the gym running around sweating because they're running in circles, but they don't have good form. Like it takes a lot to be good form, to have good form. And who you see on the way up is who you see on the way down. And, developing trust is like, it's great that I have respect. You don't need to be liked by everybody, okay? You just need to be respected by everybody and trusted by everybody. You can't, it's who you see. You just gotta know that what you say is what you mean. When I negotiate a house and anything, I'm telling you what I'm willing to pay for it. I'm not playing games, and I'm telling you what I'm charging for it. I don't like, oh, just kidding. I don't like that whole type of game. You gotta be a say what you mean and mean what you say type of person.
Where equality is missing, for lack of a better term, when equality is missing in this type of situation, no, we can't do those steps. We can't do those steps if somebody has a, what I call a better pedigree walking in on an entry-level job, meaning that the person has connections, their family have seen each other in the Hamptons, they have went to the right schools where they, connected with the right families, and they've already are one up when they go into that entry position versus somebody that worked their ass off, went to night school, bartended during the day, or excuse me, the evening, where, you know what I mean? And then this was their entry-level job. They're also a person of color. Who's going to go up first? Who's going to go up first? And that's something that I challenge a lot of CEOs, especially Bethany Frankel, to go, all right, well, what kind of mentorship programs do you have for people of color when they go into your organization? Because last I looked, I think there was only one person of color that I think I've ever seen in her organization when she was on reality TV. There was opportunity for her to also get a CEO for her company, and she chose a white man. So there's a lot of things there that she needs to actually self-reflect on. And instead of coming in and giving us advice, just label, just be simple and be very truthful and say, hey, this advice is for a white woman, because I'm not even going to have the conversation with anybody else other than white women here. And that's the thing that always kills me about Bethany Frankel, is that personally, I was a big fan, and there was a lot of parallels where I was going through and what she was going through. It was very, you know, it's almost like when everybody read Eat, Pray, Love, and they're like, oh my God, this is my story. I felt the same way with Bethany Frankel. And it was just heartbreaking to see she's unapologetically, I think at one point she had said, yes, I'm white. I'm white. So I'm white. And you see it. You see it in the relationship that she has with her audience. You see it in the relationship that she has in her business, who she is. The funny thing is, she's always very contradictory. I mean, even in her business model, I find that it's just, there's always something that's quite, that's a little bit off. I think even a while back, she had talked to a TikTok influencer and said that TikTok was shit, and she didn't want anything to do with it. She has a TikTok account now. So it's just like, ah, I don't know why she's so triggering. I guess something popped in my mind right now, what it was just noted, and I have to say it. I think what's triggering about Bethany Frankel for me, and I, the first time I've seen it was when it was the 4th of July, the year that George Floyd was brutally murdered. And she's like, happy 4th of July, with her boyfriend bikini on a boat with the American flag in the background. And that struck a chord, because I was just crying from the news feed, being here in New Zealand and looking at all of the injustice and the protests that were happening and the pushback from police, the tear gassing, people being injured. And this one's happy 4th of July. And she doesn't see me, or she doesn't really talk about what was going on in her own neighborhood. At one point she went back to Manhattan after the riots. And she's like, wow, look at this. But no acknowledgement of what the fuck is happening here. What we need to rediscover or have a conversation about. It's just, I think that's hurtful. It's very similar to why I've let go of some white friends, because I'm not being seen. I'm not being acknowledged that this is something that's real. And at the end of the day, if I'm not being seen, how can I have a reciprocal relationship with you? Ideally, like, how can I just show up at your home and talk to you? And be there and be safe and feel good about our conversations. You know, it's just not existent. So what's the point? And that's kind of the thing too. I had a childhood friend say something that was really racially triggering during the riot. A childhood friend that I really cared about and felt like family. I completely disconnected with her at that time. It was just, and she's the same race as I am. That's another conversation. But to not honor the plight and the disparity and the violence that Black people have in America, and also as a global citizen, it is not only in America. This is the real pandemic. And it's been like this for hundreds and hundreds of years. Hundreds. So if we have something to say about it and we need to correct it, it needs to be heard. And I need to have people in my life that understand that. If they don't understand that and they can't wrap their heads around it, I don't have any place for them. It is very much like that in my business. If we don't have that reciprocal respect from client to our people that work within the organization, they're going to find themselves on the very short end of that service, because what we'll do is we'll phase them out. And we are actively phasing out a lot of clients, probably the last 4 months, that don't respect and or have been like that. We've been clenching on it, like, oh gosh, they're a meal ticket. They've been with us for such a long time, where we understand now that the value of that reciprocal respect actually leans into a smaller, allowance of when you work with a client, because everything's streamlined. It's really moving on quickly and everybody's happy and we're communicating well, versus somebody that's argumentative, and has issues that are beyond anything that we can help with on our agency side. So what happens with that is that they take up the space, not from one client space, but 2 to 3 client space. And now they're calling on weekends and they're dramatizing things that don't need to be dramatic. And that takes up more space. And they also put a direct impact on the people that are working on the account. So if we have a creative producer, we have an account manager, we have me trying to manage this client, that is too much money for somebody that is and too much time, so I say time is money, money is time, to spend on somebody that is just disrespectful. And it's the same thing within my life. That's been the big jump, like within, you know, when you're in that pandemic isolation thing, you know, when you reflect on stuff, this was the biggest takeaway. It's like, wait a minute, get it right. Let's talk about leadership in a way that is, you know, meaningful for everyone. Let's talk about the ways that we can change within our organization. I love the Mary Portis podcast. I'm going to put the link in here with Eric Collins, who's an American living in London, and talking a little bit about the disparity and the gap of getting those funds. So I thought that was just such an intelligent conversation. And Eric Collins delivers it in a way where it's like, it's very factual. I always talk about, you know, as a person of color, try not to come to the table with too many receipts. But I absolutely think you should come to the table with data. And he did it. And I was so floored. It was just such an amazing thing. But in particular, it's definitely worth a listen to, because we need to have that kindness economy within all our businesses, whether you're a micro business. I consider myself as kind of a small business. We have about 3 people that work with us, 3 or 4 people that work with us. And we try to keep it small. For a number of reasons. A lot of it is because I don't like spending a lot of time in managing, and I want it to give as much hours as to people that are in the team. We want to be able to give a boutique experience, and we're going to talk a little bit more about my business on a further podcast, but we want to be able to enrich those experiences with the people that we work with. And a part of that is also for me as the business owner to make sure that the people that work on my team are having a really good experience, so they could stay here with us longer. They could grow with us. They could be really, it's something that works with them. I believe in a no particular hour schedule, work week schedule, where we have a due date. We don't have hours assigned to people, like, hey, you need to cover the 8 to 5 shift. That stuff is a relic. It doesn't work. And then I've been doing this before the pandemic. The more that we do that with our contractors, it seems to do really, really well. I'm very pleased with all of that. So there you go. So that's just a little snippet. I wanted to really talk about it. There's more examples. I might weave them into another couple of podcasts. I also want to get back to what we can do as small business owners to really amp up our social media, get into it, get into those conversations of engagement. And I also, as always, create the space for women of color here, because we're not hallucinating. We're not over dramatic. We're not too sensitive. This is a real situation of how we have to maneuver through this society in 2021, which hasn't progressed, and making a place and space and holding our ground and being successful in our own right.
Thanks for listening. Now, before you go, I just wanted to come in here and tell you I know why you hate social media. That's right. I know that you're busy, and I know that as a small business owner, you have so much going on that there's no way that you can possibly schedule in something else. So you're doing like a lot of people do, including myself. Sometimes I catch myself doing this and I have to stop, but I flick things out there and hope they land. And it's not really thought out. I don't get a lot of engagement when I do that. And I tend to put in more time and effort with my clients and not my own feed, my social media feed. But I have something that's going to help you and our business as well. And it's been proving to be very, very robust and great, and something that we want to share with you. First of all, the first thing that you need to do is sign up for our newsletter, which is called Here's What's Happening. We're very excited that we're launching something that will help small business owners really get a handle on what they need to do in social media. So go to socialglobalgrind.com and sign up now, and we will be able to drip you really tiny and very easy to digest information that you can use for your social media. Hope to see you there.